This is the Hockey News Podcast.
Welcome to the Hockey News Podcast, presented by McKinney and BetMGM. I'm Mike Stevens, and across me is Ryan Kennedy. Ryan, how you doing, pal?
Pretty good. How's it going?
It's good, man. You know, hockey is like, we're days away from opening night.
We're on the cusp.
It snuck up on me. I'm not going to lie.
Yeah.
Like, the day, at this point of the year, the days of the week kind of blend together, and it's weird because you think the preseason, you go like, oh, they got 8 games they have to play or whatever. It's going to be way longer. You think training camp? No. We're like, we're talking about roster battles when they play a regular season game starting Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy stuff.
Yep.
Crazy. Lots is going on in the world today, especially in hockey.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say we're a world podcast. We're a hockey podcast. We're not CNN here. But
no.
I would say the biggest news story that kind of came down the pike yesterday, and it ties into a couple other topics we're going to talk about, is the Ottawa Senators. The appointment viewing TV, you know, like supposed to be run and gun Ottawa Senators. They've now lost their starting goaltender, who was, I guess, perceived to be their starting goaltender, Cam Talbot. And this is not a minor injury. They lost him for 5 to 7 weeks with an upper body injury. This is huge. And so in a corresponding move, they claimed a very intriguing goaltender in Magnus Helberg, who had ripped it up in the KHL for 5 years prior. He's 32, though. And then he signed a one-year deal with the Red Wings last year, never ended up actually playing for them. But now is going into Ottawa, you know, potentially as the backup. What does this do to the Sens? Because I mean, this is supposed to be the year they take this huge step forward, and now their veteran starting goaltender, who they paid assets for, who they got, he's out for potentially 2 months.
Yeah, this is tough for the Senators because I mean, they're still a young squad, even though they added veterans like Talbot and Claude Giroux and Alex DeBrincat. You know, the sort of meat of your foundation there is some of the young players like Brady Tkachuk, Tim Stützle. You know, you got Jake Sanderson coming up on the blue line to help out Thomas Chabot. My worry for the Senators is that they can't get off to a slow start because it's a very competitive division in a couple of different ways where you've got that top end, the Tampas, Floridas, Torontos, but then you have that sort of emerging, I guess call it the underclass of the rebuilders, where it's Ottawa, Detroit, and Buffalo, where they're all looking to take that next step, and you can't get behind the eight ball quickly. So, I mean, you hope that Anton Forsberg can step up and really maybe steal a game for you or just keep you in games because, you know, again, that defense core, we've talked about it before, it's still very much a work in progress.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, if Jake Sanderson can play a big role, that's huge for you, but you know, the depth is not fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
So that puts more pressure on your forwards to make sure that, you know, you hang back. You make sure that puck gets out of the zone before you have your fun. So it's a big challenge. You know, Coach DJ Smith obviously is going to have to make sure that everybody is on the same page early on. And I think it's going to be a bit of a grind until Talbot's healthy. And you know, and once he does get back, then you have a little more of a security blanket there because we've definitely seen the high end in Cam Talbot throughout his career. But they really have to make sure that they don't go on an early skid because then it's just too much catch up and then you're not playing meaningful games late in the season, which is obviously the goal for Ottawa this year.
Absolutely. I mean, side note, do you remember when Cam Talbot played like 70 games for the Oilers that one year? Like that's what I bring it back to because he always seems like a tandem guy now.
Right.
You know, he especially in Minnesota, like he just seemed like that, you know, a good like 1A, 1B.
Yeah.
I remember this guy, he was like, and he led them to like a second round. Like, that was pretty good. Look, Anton Forsberg, he's gonna be the most important guy in Ottawa now. I mean, he's gonna be the most important center, at least for the start of the season. And mainly, like, not even just because of his talent or whatnot, but this is a guy who they believe in. They signed, I mean, they got him off waivers, you know. Miraculously, and then he ended up kind of, I don't want to say keeping them afloat considering how bad they were last year, but he had a 919 save percentage last year, you know, in front of a really bad squad.
Yeah.
And now you look at him, they signed him to a 3-year deal, $2.75 million. I mean, it's not a huge cap hit, but it's not a tiny one either. They believe in him. And this is a guy who, you know, maybe he could have thought, I'm going into camp as like the perspective, or before, at least before they got Talbot, I'm going to go into camp as the prospective starter. I just got a shiny 3-year extension. You know, I helped sort of bridge that gap during a really, you know, really rocky time for the team last year. And now he gets to absorb, or I guess assume that role again. Now he gets the opportunity to really establish himself and potentially kind of take Talbot's job, if depending on how he plays. I mean, listen, everyone's talking about Cam Talbot like he's, you know, he's the veteran, solid, fortifying piece that this team needs. He's 35 years old. He will now be coming off a major upper body injury. And he also, like, he had a 9.11 save percentage last year. He's been kind of in that range ever since that 1 year with the Oilers. Like, he's not a definitive number one starting goaltender in the NHL. He's a veteran guy, which is important on the Sens team. But he's not like the solidified slam the door option that they're like, all right, he's going to guide this young team into the promised land. So I think it's a great opportunity for Forsberg. But like you said, this defense is now going to get extremely, like, it's also going to take even more importance, and it's a tough one.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point about Forsberg versus Talbot. And I think the issue here is that you kind of wanted both of them so that if one faltered, then at least you had the other, and
yes,
you had options. Now, you know, is Hellberg a guy that can play, you know, 5 or 6 games in a row? I don't know. I mean, maybe. Goaltenders are voodoo. We say it all the time. But with Talbot out, now it's, okay, well, if Forsberg can't repeat what he did last year, then you could be in trouble. And I mean, really, as you pointed out, even though he had a 919 save percentage, they didn't win a ton of games.
Exactly. So, yeah. I think Ottawa Senators fans would be rejoicing if he repeated that 919.
Yeah, and for sure.
Like, look what happened last year. Now, they have a better team up front, obviously. Yeah. But I would say the defense is not, it's either the exact same or potentially worse, given how, like, certain, you know, stalwarts have now aged a year, potentially, like Nikita Zaitsev, guys of that ilk. It'll be really interesting. Like, Hellberg, I'm really fascinated to see him play because he just absolutely tore it up in the KHL. And I know the KHL save percentages are the median is higher than the NHL, just
yes,
because it's a bigger ice.
Yeah.
You know, the offense isn't quite as high. It's harder to get. Like the KHL point leaders are like point per game. If you get a point per game in the NHL, it's,
yeah. It, and there are some very bad teams in the KHL.
Yeah. Like, if you're playing Kunlun Red Star, which is like barely a hockey team at this point, like you're good. If you let in 5 goals, like, you should be banished to Siberia or whatever. Like, it's bad. But look, he's looked incredible in the KHL, and then he also looked incredible in the Olympics for Sweden as well.
Yeah.
And again, the Olympics was not exactly the breeding ground for NHL contracts we thought it was going to be.
Right.
But he's a very intriguing guy. He's 32, so he's older than you would think for a guy who's like very unproven. But you never know. Like, I really like the idea of just taking a shot. Like,
sure,
he's free.
That's right.
You know, he's not making a lot of money.
Yeah.
So, you know, if he doesn't pan out, oh no, that's terrible. We can put him in Belleville, or we can, you know, mutually terminate the contract if you want. You can go back to the KHL, which I wouldn't recommend right now. But, you know, we'll see. But but Talbot being hurt, I mean, that's tough for them. It puts a lot more stress on certain weaker aspects of their roster. It'll be difficult to kind of navigate. I mean, man, the solid solidifying hand of Matt Murray could really come in handy right now.
There you go. Never know. You're just stoking the Battle of Ontario there.
Just stoking it. You know how I be.
Yeah.
All right. This one is, I want to preface this next topic by saying that I don't like change.
Fair.
Change is scary.
Yes.
When the world changes around me, I get frightened and I lash out. and so dashboard ads are coming to NHL. You know, Greg Wyshynski had a great piece on it yesterday. Basically, the NHL is going to CGI the ads onto the boards of the rink, kind of flip them around.
Yeah.
That means that, you know, players could be in a fight for the puck along the boards, and they could change from like a Domino's ad to like a Pizza Hut ad or whatever.
Right.
You know, it has the potential to be jarring. How do we feel about this?
You know what? I feel that it probably won't be as invasive as maybe people think. Like, I would assume they wouldn't change it in front of your eyes. I think it'll probably be, you know, when the puck's down the other end of the ice and things like that. Because that could be a little distracting for me. And you know, they've done a couple of things over the years where we've seen ads kind of superimposed on the glass, yeah. or even in the netting. I think the netting I've seen as well.
Really?
Mm-hmm. And I don't mind it because, you know, it's revenue, you know, which, you know, hypothetically helps the salary cap go up and
think
and
so.
more fun in that regard. And obviously coming out of the pandemic, you know, I mean, revenue is more important than ever for the league as it tries to just, you know, get back to where it had been growing. For me, some of the, and I say this as an old, that, you know, for me, the more distracting things were some of the technologies they were trying out. You know, I remember back when the All-Star game was in San Jose,
and they were
having individual, you know, the guys were on the ice and little things would pop up.
It looked like a Fortnite lobby during warm up when it was everything was above their heads. Yeah. It was just dudes skating around.
Yeah, and you and Connor McDavid would be hidden behind somebody else's like thought bubble. So I understood, you know, for people that were like on their phones or using it as a second screen, that was very cool and there was cool information there. But for me, where I'm just traditional, like I'm just watching the game, I found that distracting. This, I think, will be less so. I think it'll be one of those things that people eventually forget about. The only ad board I ever sort of like remember is like Schnucks in St. Louis. I think it might be it's either.
What is Schnucks? I've never heard of this.
It's either like hockey equipment or liquor. I don't remember. But it's just like, I love the word Schnucks.
Yeah.
It's just a great word. So I always like think about that one. But otherwise I think it'll be this sort of thing that we just get used to.
Well, it's funny just how prevalent this has been in other sports. Like I was watching, like I'm a big Jays guy. Mm-hmm. I've been watching it and it only dawned on me, I would say like a couple weeks ago, that they superimpose an ad onto the mound.
Really?
You don't even notice it.
What?
You know, and it's a very random ad. Like it's usually for a company that, you know, is throwing a Hail Mary when it comes to ad dollars on there. But they like, this is going to happen. And you know what? Like I'm of two minds of this because I'm a big fan of the NHL making money. Because I hate the salary cap with burning passion, and I want it. And the fact that I'm watching bench players on, you know, the Milwaukee Bucks sign deals that eclipse Connor McDavid's is starting to grate on me a little bit. You know, now that we're talking about, can you sign a PTO guy? Oh no, well we have to. You know, we only have $600 in cap space right now. We got to commit tax fraud to make it happen.
Right.
It's really annoying. You know what the NHL reminds me of, and you were mentioning that you're an old, so this is my young reference. The NHL reminds me of a YouTuber. Because at a certain point YouTube just shut off ad revenue, or they would demonetize your video if you said like a swear at certain points, and so every YouTuber started taking like a ton of brand deals.
Oh.
And the NHL, it seems like COVID was the adpocalypse, as they call it. Mm. So the NHL is this YouTuber that's just taking every brand deal they can. You know, they're doing helmet ads, they're doing jersey ads, they're CGIing ads onto the boards. Mm-hmm. They're gonna eventually at some point they're gonna. Like if you look, and especially being in the States, this really kind of stood out to me is every single segment, every single, you know, like piece of equipment or anything that would ever touch a camera or touch a camera lens in the arena is sponsored by something. Mm-hmm. If we were in Tampa, it would be the University of Florida power play. It is
right.
You know, and so I'm all for making the money. But at a certain point, it's like it becomes a little like numbing. Like at a certain point, you can't remember what the ads are. And then at what point does it really matter? You know? So, but I did hear too that like you're saying that you don't think they're going to change it in front of your eyes, but I like from what I read from Wyshynski's, I think that they're going to superimpose like and keep things kind of rolling, which might be a little distracting. It could be one of those things that just vanishes, you know, but I don't know. It's wild. I also, side note, whoever, like, I can't remember what the company is, but whoever paid for their jersey ad on the Vegas jerseys should get their money back because they are camouflaged completely.
Oh, yes. I want to say it's Circa.
Something like that. It's a gold on gold ad. It's like when Harold Ballard put blue nameplates on the blue jerseys. You can't even read it. It's pretty wild.
But if I'm going to be pragmatic here,
okay.
We just talked about it. So,
that's how they get you.
That's how they get you.
That's how they get you. You know what?
The house always wins.
The house always wins. Yeah. You're right. All right, moving on. This is going to be a bit of a quick pod, I guess, you know, because there's not as much to talk about, really, but it's waiver season.
It did.
You know how I said last week that training camp is my favorite time of year? No, waiver season is my favorite time of year. You know, you get your pumpkin spice latte. You know, the air is crisp and it's waiver season.
You check the NHL database.
Check the NHL database.
When you wake up in the morning.
You know, you wait until 2 p.m. Eastern,
yeah.
You know, for the waivers to come in. So this could very likely be out of date by the time we you know, get up there, because we're talking about guys who are on waivers and it's only a 24-hour period, really.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to talk about, you know, there's just going to be a huge influx of waivers coming in. Teams are making cuts in training camp now. We're seeing them. Who would you – so let me – like, there's – of the October 2nd guys who are on waivers, it's Malcolm Subban, William Lagesson, Oscar Donsk, Greg McKegg, Dylan Hetherington, Drake Kajula, Alex Nylander, Dustin Tokarski, Cole Lind, and Zach Fucali. Who out of those players would you select or would you pluck if you were an NHL GM?
Yeah, there's a couple. And it's funny because that is the, you know, the list for one particular date. But, you know, I'll kind of joke that's like, we'll probably see these guys on waivers
exactly.
again at some point. Like, once you get into the waivers thing, like, you know, like Greg McKegg has definitely been picked up. A number of times. Drake Kajula as well, I think. But for me, like, I've always been very intrigued by William Lagesson.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sort of came up with the Oilers. The thing I'll always remember was there was a World Juniors where Sweden lost the bronze medal, which they've done often, because at least back in the day, they didn't really care about winning bronze. But I remember they lost the bronze one time, and Lagesson was coming off the ice, and he was furious that they lost. He was the only guy on the team that was furious. And mm-hmm. I was like, that to me is a great trait. Like, he cares.
Yeah.
He cares about every game. He wants to win the last game of the tournament. You know, he's a physical defenseman. There's not a ton of offense to his game. But, you know, I think he could be that sort of bottom-pairing guy. And you know, we've seen some good hockey from him in the past. He was waived by Carolina. Obviously, Carolina has a lot of good options on defense. So there wasn't a spot for him. That's fine. The other one for me is Zach Fucali, the goaltender, who really helped out Washington in the short term last year when they needed him. And so the Caps waive him. And I, you know what? I just feel like Fucali has always been that like great team guy,
yeah.
You know, good in the room, you know, doesn't have a ton of size. I think he's kind of 6'1". So which is big enough.
Yeah, what does that make me, man? I'm 5'10".
Not an NHL goalie. Jeez. Unfortunately, I hate to break it to you.
My dream is dead.
That's why you're behind the mic. But Fucali has shown that, you know, he can get you some wins. Mm-hmm. And, you know, he can just sort of fit into an organization. And it is kind of unfortunate the way waivers works where, you know, after your, you know, certain years of your contract, you have to go up and down. Because
yeah.
it does really feel like there's those tweener guys where it's like, with that... That third goalie that's sort of a veteran, it would be nice to have him as an emergency, mm-hmm. you know, when you need him. But unfortunately, that's not the way the world works.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if I'm a team and I needed a solid backup that you know isn't going to complain about ice time, but when he needs to go in, he's there for you. I like Zach Fucali. I think he's a good option.
I think that's a great option. I'm really, like I said, I'm really intrigued by William Lagesson. I think anyone that kind of comes out of Carolina is really intriguing to mm-hmm. me, you know. Like, they just seem to be a good developmental. And I know he's played other places before, but, you know, the fact that he stuck around this long, they're pretty pretty intense thing. I mean, Oscar Donsk has always been really interesting to me. He played for Vegas for a little bit. Remember in, I think it was in their first season where both of their goalies got hurt.
Yes.
Or all of their, and they had to call up like Dylan Ferguson to play for
yes.
a bit out of the WHL, I think
That's
he was
right.
playing in. And Oscar Donsk kind of held the fort for a little
just
bit.
Dance.
Just Donsk. We can Donsk.
Pads and dance the blues.
We can Donsk if we want to.
Yes.
We can leave that world behind.
Nice.
And I've always, like, Drake Kajula is really, he was getting some really high praise from the Pittsburgh like beat, I guess,
mm-hmm.
I was seeing on Twitter. I mean, okay, so here's the thing, too, and we're in Toronto, so we got to talk about, you know, the conversation. And I saw a little bit of it popping up, and I want to shut it down before it even gets there.
Okay.
The Alex Nylander pick him on waivers talk.
Oh, was there?
So there was some, you know, Alex Nylander hits waivers, and people are like, oh, reunite him with William. You know, like right. it's, and I think, you know, he's former top 10 pick. He was 8th overall to Buffalo, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably shouldn't have gone that high, but we'll see. This is a guy who couldn't make Chicago's lineup last year. So maybe we should pump the brakes a little bit
mm-hmm.
on that. I just think that he's probably like a Josh Levo. You know, we were talking about him before we started recording. Like
yes.
he just seems like a guy who could chip in the odd goal or two at the NHL level. And you know, mainly spend a lot of time in the AHL, and I don't think he's incredible. Tokarski, it's funny because two like legendary World Junior goalies are on this list, and Tokarski and Fucale.
There you go.
Tokarski is, it will always be remembered to me as the man who made Pierre Maguire moan on national television, which is a sound I never needed to hear. But you know, if you want a good anthem singer, pick up Malcolm Subban. You know, like for example, I haven't seen Martina at any of the Leafs games yet, and if she leaves, I'll be absolutely heartbroken. But who knows? Malcolm Subban, fill in. There's a lot here. I would probably do Cajula just as like a good depth guy, but it brings up a larger conversation about waivers, right?
Yes.
And the way that, so you were talking about it, like it's, you want to have, like it would be nice to have that, you know, that third goalie just in case you need him or that. And waivers were essentially established to ensure that teams couldn't just stash you in their system. But it's almost like having an opposite effect now. Like it's having the inverse effect of what you'd want it to be, where it's supposed to give players opportunities. But now, like, it's forcing guys to wait until the absolute last desperate minute to call up certain players because they'll realize, oh, we'll probably end up losing them on waivers. And then also it's almost like a service time thing in the MLB, where it's preventing guys who are waiver exempt from getting opportunities in the NHL because they realize, oh, that waiver exemption out of camp, it'd be great to have that guy in the AHL. Because if the guy who is, you know, if we're choosing between, for example, it's the Nick Robertson and Dennis Malgin roster battle, where they're both playing incredibly well. But if you don't, but if Dennis, and they both should probably make the team, but there's only really one spot. And so if Dennis Malgin makes the team, he's on the team, and you can just send Nick Robertson down, pass him through waivers, stash him in there, call him up whenever you need to, whatever. But if Nick Robertson makes the team out of camp and Dennis Malgin doesn't, you then have to put Dennis Malgin on waivers in order to send him down. And he'll likely get picked by another team. And then, oh boy, whoopsie daisy, you lost a good asset who's playing really well. So yes, it'll send him to another team and maybe he'll get another opportunity. But like it's almost having this opposite effect where it's like keeping a really good prospect who's performing really well in the AHL. Do we need a revamp of the waiver talk or the waiver sort of system? How would you navigate this?
Yeah, it's really tough. And I will say that, I mean, you know, maybe there's some kind of like exception where you can designate one player, you know, who knows. But I mean, to me, the interesting conversation too is, you know, if these guys were actually great, then they wouldn't be on waiver. So
exactly.
And, you know, I mean, we've seen some sort of funny things happen where a certain goalie will get picked up like 3 times in 2 weeks because people are desperate.
Forsberg. Happened to Forsberg last year.
There you go.
He was an Oiler for a little bit.
That's wild.
I know.
Yeah.
But he gets a 3-year deal.
There you go.
Goalies are good.
Yeah. Sorry. But, you know, it is important to sort of pump the brakes sometimes and be like, okay, well, yeah, if they could stick with the team, then they would have stuck with the team. And, you know, there are some situations where, you know, guys get lost or, you know, guys, there's just too much depth. You know, we were talking about Alex Barré-Boulet with Tampa Bay. And it's like, okay, is it that Tampa Bay is just super deep or, you know, is it that he's just maybe a better AHLer than NHLer? Mm-hmm. I mean, he did let's face it, he got passed by Ross Colton.
Oh, at absolutely.
Some point, they might not be the exact same player, but in terms of roster spots, you know, Tampa Bay, you look at their lineup and I think they've shown tremendous flexibility where they're not a top six, bottom six kind of team.
Yep.
Like, you know, they have guys that do specialize, but guys also have a lot of skill in the bottom six. But at the same time, I can't entirely dismiss waivers because way back in the day, Martin St. Louis was on waivers.
Absolutely.
And ironically, it was the Tampa Bay Lightning that ended up benefiting with a Hall of Fame player that every other team or most teams in the league could have had for free and said, nah, it's all right.
There are a bunch of guys who, you know, who just need a shot. And sometimes waivers really works but also like it can prevent guys from having that shot. Like I said, like
it's a good point.
Like Barré-Boulet, for example, like he was never gonna get a shot in Tampa, and then he goes and gets somewhat of a shot in Seattle, didn't really do much, now he's back in Tampa. But like there really are, I think what makes these guys these like waiver darlings, right? Because we were talking about who are the top, you know, like guys who've just been who are always on waivers and players are always like, oh, you got to pick that guy up.
Yeah.
You got to. And, you know, Barré-Boulet was one. Like, for a long time, the Leafs didn't want to send Josh Levo down because he'd go on waivers, you know. And very rarely do you see them turn out. But then you have guys like Obe Kubel last year, mm-hmm. who worked out really well for Colorado. And now he's, you know, he's coming into camp with a roster spot in Toronto. Or mm-hmm. Paul Byron, you know, he was a waivers guy.
Yeah.
You know, like it's, you know, Anton Forsberg. That was a big one. Like there are a lot of guys who, you know, like who just need a shot and waivers mm-hmm. works. I think it should revamp the age thing. Like I think they should make it older to the sure. point where waiver, I guess, eligibility hits older.
Yeah.
So at least you can be able to send a 25-year-old like Dennis Mulligan down, mm-hmm. you know, and not have to worry about it. Yeah. In order to play a 21-year-old, like these are two young guys. 25 is on the, you know, on the borderline of being a prospect in certain right. instances. It just seems, I do think there needs to be some, like many things in NHL, there needs to be a bit of a little tweak.
Yeah.
But it's not terrible. You know, it's not completely broken. But yeah, I mean, look, there will be another crop of waivers coming up. Right now, it's 11:54 a.m. on Tuesday. There will be another crop of waivers coming in 2 hours, waiver candidates. And who knows? It could be some pretty crazy guys. All right, another topic I wanted to talk about real quick, and it's a take that I'm getting. I had it last night, and maybe I shouldn't have tweeted it. I should have waited to tweet. But I'm getting it on both sides here okay. because I tweeted, you know, and. We talked last podcast about players who need to prove themselves in camp in the preseason. You know, who needs training camp, who needs preseason the most. And mm-hmm. I chose, somewhat controversially, Juraj Slepkovský. Mm-hmm. I thought, you know, this is a guy who was a controversial number one overall pick. He needs to prove himself. And I think the opportunity to, you know, the team passed over the consensus number one to get him. Mm-hmm. And I think he needs to go out in the preseason and just shut all his critics up, take the heat off him and all that. And in the first two games and two shifts, going into last night, he didn't. He was objectively bad to the point where the Kent Hughes, the Canadian GM, came out and said, like, and publicly was like, yeah, we would like to see more from him. Mm. And then in the first two shifts of the game against the Toronto Maple Leafs last night, he gives the puck away right to Zach Aston-Reese, who scores. And keep in mind, this is Zach Aston-Reese. He doesn't score a lot.
Right.
And so he's looking pretty bad. So I go and I tweet, you know, like, I know it's a preseason, take everything with a huge grain of salt, mm. you know, but that being said, like, Slepkovský's looked like real bad so far. And then he proceeds to have like a bunch of scoring chances and look pretty good. Mm. But the greater topic here is like, should we be kind of worried? Because he had a pretty underwhelming rookie tournament and apparently, you know, he didn't look super great in camp. And then he looked really bad for those first two preseason games first two or three preseason games up until last night where he still was held off the score sheet. But it's held off the score sheet in a 5-4 loss with most of Montreal's main players playing. Should we be worried about this guy?
I'm not worried because he doesn't have to play 82 NHL games this mm-hmm. year. And I know it's hard when it's a first overall pick.
Yes.
But I think we were talking about this last week as well. Mm-hmm. Owen Power didn't go straight to the NHL. He decided to stay another year at the University of Michigan. And, you know, once his sophomore season was completed, he played a few games with the Sabres at the end of the year and he looked pretty good. So that gave him a nice little springboard coming into this year. Mm-hmm. And now expectations are obviously still very high for Owen Power, as well as they should be, because he's a very good defenseman. With Slafkovský, I mean, this is basically his first time playing in North America. Yeah. And yes, he has played pro hockey before. Yes, he has played, you know, big international tournaments, whether it was the Olympics or the World Championship for Slovakia. But he hasn't faced real NHL competition. Yes. So there's going to be an adjustment period. And again, the great thing about him coming over from Europe is that he's not tethered yeah. to a major junior team.
Which is the dumbest rule in hockey, if we're going to yeah. talk about tweaks.
I mean, yeah, totally. Yeah. So you don't, you know, if you have to send him to AHL Laval
yeah.
for a couple of weeks, it's totally fine. Mm-hmm. It might be great for him just to sort of, you know, get a rhythm, yeah. you know, be able to make mistakes down there, learn from said mistakes, and it's not under the searing spotlight of the NHL. Again, you know, I mean, there's still some camp to play, and I think that, you know, he's the type of player where he's a big body. Mm-hmm. Now he's come to the NHL where, you know, he's still one of the bigger guys on the ice, but these are the fastest, strongest guys he's ever played against. Mm-hmm. They're not as intimidated by him as, you know, he would have seen playing over with TPS in Finland last year. The decisions are quicker.
The ice is smaller.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, he has a little bit of experience on small ice, but mostly on bigger ice. So that's an adjustment. So it, again, it's all about expectations, managing those expectations and saying, look, he's a teenager. We don't need him to be our MVP this season. We want him to be our MVP in like 4 or 5 seasons.
Yes.
So I think that, you know, it's a searing spotlight, but we have to remember that it's a marathon, not a sprint. Mm-hmm. And sometimes bigger players take longer to get adjusted in the NHL. So I just hope that people don't go too wild if the Habs decide we need him to play for Laval for a bit, or, you know, we're going to start him on the fourth line. You know, if you look at Alexis Lafreniere in New York, another number one pick, where, I mean, the Rangers were just stacked on the wing. Mm-hmm. They weren't going to gift him a, you know, a scoring line opportunity, but, you know, he's working his way up there. And I know patience is hard when you have a shiny new toy like that, but in the long run, it might be the best thing to not just sort of jam Slavkovsky into a role that he might not be ready for yet.
And you know what? Like, to their point, I was going to, like, the Canadians have a really bad history of doing this, of trying to jam players in. They ruined Alex Galchenyuk by doing that.
Right.
You know, like, they've, you know, their draft record in the first round in past years is not great. But this is a new regime. You know, this is a new, they have new, you know, coaches and new advisors all across the board. And so I would really respect, honestly, an organization that looks at, like, they picked this guy first overall. You know, it's, they hopped over a guy like Shane Wright, who was the consensus number one overall pick. They did this at home in their own building.
Yeah.
You know, it's a big deal. Like, no matter what, this is a big deal. They have to get this pick right. Yeah. And I would respect an organization if they went like, listen, we're taking the long game here. We are not going to be that good this year. I think that they kind of realize that, mm-hmm. at least from the management side, because the coaching never really came. But the management, you have to go, we're not challenging for a cup this year. This is a growth year. This is a year we need to see. I would respect them if they're like, you know what? Let's get him in the AHL. Let's not rush this. Let's not ruin this asset, this you know, sparkling asset that we have. Mm-hmm. Get him in the AHL. Have him, you know, sort of get used to being a number one option. Have him get used to being, you know, like the star on North American ice. He can make mistakes. He can turn over the puck. He can stumble, but there's not as many eyes in Laval. Like, there just aren't. And so I would really, I think that would be the best move. Like why start your first overall pick on the fourth line in a year where you're not really going to compete? What's the point of that? What's he going to learn? Mm. You know, get him in the AHL, put him on the penalty kill, you know, put him on the power play, but like you sort of force feed him these difficult minutes that in the NHL, a number one winger, you know, a team MVP, a guy who you know, they're hoping to be their next Ovechkin or whatnot, is going to get. And make it, develop him, give him a two-way game. Allow him to feel the confidence of using that size against sort of comparatively weaker talent. And then he can adjust that back to the NHL when they're ready. And I mean, Laval it's in the same province. It's really close. You know, the rinks have the same name.
Right.
it's Bell Center and Laplace Bell or Bell Place. Yeah. You know, it's like it you know, I think it's, and you do that for a reason, you know, so you can have that that harmony in between these two levels. I think that's what you need to do, because yes, he looked pretty good on what was it, Monday yesterday? Like I said, days of the week are kind of blending together. But he looked pretty good, but at the end of the day, like he just doesn't seem like he's super ready for the entire sort of grind of an NHL season. And you cannot mess this up. You cannot mess this pick up. Be safe with it, nurture him, incubate him, and then release him.
And of course, the most recent example in Montreal, Jesperi Kotkaniemi, who was rushed in, put in a position that he was not ready for, and we saw the result.
Exactly. But then, and to be fair, they changed coaches and everything, but like, he sent Caulfield down for a little bit. You know, at least he was able to get away from that terrible situation where I think they sent him away really when the peak sort of like depression kind of hit that Montreal room last year in the really like the final days of the Ducharme era. He was okay in the AHL, but you sort of shielded him from that. And then he came up with a new coach, looked rejuvenated, and now we're again having that Will Caulfield score 40 goals talk, which he won't. But still, you know, so it's really I think that's a great. I think that would be the best way to do it. It's just something that's on my mind. All right, Ryan. We do rapid fire now, right?
No, we do mailbag.
Okay,
now.
So we got
end with rapid fire.
Okay, we end with rapid fire. Now I'm doing rapid fire for you this week, right?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So we have some mail. We sent out the beacon. We have some mailbag questions. Some of them are actually pretty good with with Ryan's sort of collegiate mentality here. So I'm going to start off with that one, actually. So this is from Matt Poirier, or Poirier, I think. M-P-O-I-R-057 on Twitter. Why is Sense Twitter talking about Shane Pinto like he's the second coming of Alfie? They all say he's untouchable in the Chikrin trade rumors. College numbers seem good, but similar to many others. Why do they love this guy so much, and what am I missing? That's a great – I would love to know.
Yeah, and, you know, we missed some development with Shane Pinto last year because he got hurt. But, I mean, the trajectory that this kid was on, going from the USHL to the University of North Dakota, was just fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was great in college. Excellent athlete. I remember talking to the Sens for a Future Watch story, and they were saying like he was a really good baseball player as well when he was a teenager. So he's got that athleticism, great motor, two-way player. And what I really like about Pinto is because of all those attributes, you can fit him up and down the lineup. Mm-hmm. You can play center, you know, you can put him on the wing if you need to as well. I guess I almost look at him kind of like a Dawson Mercer in that respect, where he can just give you so many different looks. They might not be exactly the same player, but I like that sort of versatility. And if you look at the Sens forward core right now, you know, they've got talent, you know, they've got some talent down the middle led by Josh Norris. Obviously, they've got some great wingers now with DeBrincat and Tkachuk. And then, you know, Giroux can do either. Mm-hmm. You know, we've seen him in recent years play center and wing. So for me, Shane Pinto is a guy that, you know, you're just going to get 100% every shift. And, you know, when he's up at full speed, he can be that kind of heart and soul player that, you know, maybe he at one point he's your number two center, or maybe he is an amazing shutdown center, or maybe he's a scoring winger. Like, he has all those possibilities. And I think, you know, it's funny. I mean, obviously, it's not going to be Daniel Alfredson, who was an incredible scorer.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like, we've seen Pinto, you know, during his development years, really up it on offense. And I just think he can be very valuable for this team.
Now, like, to the point of the question, do you think he's untouchable in a potential package for Jacob Chychrun?
Yeah, that's a tough one, because if, you know, if I'm the Arizona Coyotes, that's exactly the type of player I'm going to target. And that's the trouble when you get into these sort of like trade rumors is, you know, if you're Arizona, you want as much as possible. If you're Ottawa, you're saying, well, we'll give you like our second or third best prospect and, you know, a second round pick or, you know, a first round pick. I mean, you're going to have to give, a first for Chychrun plus.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's such a valuable asset. And again, for me, it's like, why would Arizona trade Chychrun? I mean, he's the perfect cornerstone to go with, you know, like Logan Cooley and, you know, maybe Dylan Gunther, guys like that, that are still coming up. But, yeah, I mean, would I trade Pinto in a package for Jacob Chychrun? I wouldn't want to, but if I felt like Jacob Chychrun was like the final piece of the puzzle to get Ottawa to, you know, the next level, then it's like...
Well, do you feel that?
No, I still think they need more.
Yeah.
At least right now. Now, if DeBrincat goes off for 50 goals and Claude Giroux, you know, becomes, you know, just this like integral leader that also gets you like 75 points, then okay, maybe that's a different story because... You know, Ottawa's playing at a level that, you know, even optimistically is better than we expected. But, you know, again, I mean, we already talked about their goaltending and do they have enough right now with Talbot out? Do they even have enough with Talbot in? You know, again, these are all big questions. So I don't feel like the time is right for a Jacob Chychrun trade to Ottawa. But sometimes you got to make those trades a little early to make them happen. So, yeah, I don't know.
All right. Next question. This is from sportpassion.de, so at Lars_MAH. Which team is a dark horse contender that no one is really talking about, and which of the good teams is most likely to implode and fall out of the playoffs? I'll let you take this one first.
Okay, so I'm thinking I'm going to start with the team that I feel people aren't really talking about as a dark horse contender is St. Louis. Still, you know, a team, I know they've lost some things, but they still have those great veterans led by Ryan O'Reilly, you know, Vladimir Tarasenko back doing his thing. They got Jordan Kyrou and Robert Thomas, who are like the next wave that had their offensive breakouts. I still like the D. You know, a healthy Torrey Krug, I think, is a big upgrade. You know, last year, obviously, not, you know, what they were hoping in terms of having him the whole time. Yeah, goaltending, Jordan Binnington. You don't know if you're getting Stanley Cup goaltender or not, but at least he has won a Stanley Cup. We've seen it before.
Yeah.
And you can't say that for every goalie in the NHL.
You definitely can't.
It's a small group. So I think as a dark horse, like, I wouldn't want to – like, St. Louis is the only team that gave Colorado problems until they got to the Stanley Cup final.
No, absolutely.
Right? Yeah. So let's not forget that. So that would be the team where I don't think they're getting enough love right now. The team I'd be worried about falling out is Washington.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the injuries, because their defense is not great, you know, Darcy Kemper, you know, coming off a Stanley Cup winning season where, he got hurt for part of that run. He was very good when they needed him. But there were also games where it was, you know, kind of 6-4 victories where, you know, he probably won a couple of back. So Washington's a team where they're in a tough division and they've got some crucial injuries this year. Obviously, Nicholas Backstrom's future is the huge headline.
You're very old.
And they are. Yeah. They are old. So that's the team I would be worried about.
I think that's a great – I think Washington's a great pick. Like, I think – I really do think, like, this is – like, that's a team, like I said, they're just – they're old. A lot of their key guys are banged up. They committed a lot. They did the thing where they commit to, an over-30 goalie on a big deal. Coming off a good, like, they basically gave him the contract that another team gave Braden Holtby that he shouldn't have gotten.
Right.
You know, like, it's literally the exact same scenario where he was a UFA after. And also, like, again, Kemper had to retrain his eye twice a day to track the puck. Like, that is, it's pretty tough. Now, then again, they have a medical staff that probably did extensive evaluations on him before they signed him. I am not a doctor. Contrary to popular belief.
Fair.
So I'm not. This isn't necessarily like a Stanley Cup contender, but I think a team that is going to take a big step forward that not a lot of people are talking about is the Kraken.
Yeah,
I'm actually really like having a 1-2, or it's not going to be a 1-2 yet, but having on their roster at least Matty Beniers and Shane Wright for a full season is going to be really interesting to watch. I think Beniers is already rocking like crazy, and Shane Wright will take a while, like maybe take a little bit, but he's still going to be, you know, an effective NHL player.
Yeah.
But getting a guy like Oliver Bjorkstrand,
that was big.
Like, that's huge. Like, and you paid nothing for him. He was definitive, like, based on the numbers, the best forward on the Columbus Blue Jackets last year. And this is, and keep in mind, another forward who played for them, Patrick Laine, signed for $9 million basically this year, 8.7.
Yeah.
So that's big. Like, I look at their lineup and there aren't really any like huge stars other than Beniers and Wright who could potentially grow into that. Mm. They have a lot of really just like solid middle six guys.
Yeah.
Like, they have Eberle, Jaden Schwartz, Andre Burakovsky, Bjorkstrand, Yanni Gord, Jared McCann, Alex Wenberg. Yeah. Like, the list goes on and on.
Even a healthy Brandon Tanev.
Healthy Brandon Tanev. And even like their defense, like Vince Dunn could kind of mix it up a little bit. Alexiak, Adam Larson, they signed Justin Schultz. William Borgen is kind of an underrated guy. Even like Carson Soucy has managed to find a name for himself. And then if you get anything close to what you were expecting to pay, what you're expecting to get when you paid for Philip Grubauer, like if he can rebound at all, that's huge. I think this is a team that is shaping up to be pretty good. And if not, again, they have a lot of opportunities to add assets to the deadline and keep going forward. But I think it's a team that, at least from last year, where they were just a team of apathy. Like, there was nothing special about them.
Yeah.
It was all just a bunch of like third or fourth liners put into positions that they weren't ready for with a goaltender who was just having a nightmare season. There was nothing to watch them for. Now, I mean, I think there's a great vibe there.
Yeah.
I think like basically everything coming out of camp. And I think that they're going to be really good. My other, like, in terms of actual like contender, it's the Kings, obviously. I mean, the Kings are going to be,
that's a good one.
Like, the Kings are going to be fantastic this year. Mm. They have a ton of depth. Adding Fiala is exactly what they needed. Mm. I like that two-headed goalie that they have where, like, look, Jonathan Quick is probably going to go into camp as the starter, or go into the season as a starter. I get it. But having Cal Peterson behind him is great. You know, you signed Sean Durzi to a tiny deal. You signed Mikey Anderson to a tiny deal. You know, you have, like, I think it's going to be a great – I think that's going to be a team that actually challenges for potentially – maybe not a Stanley Cup yet, but, like, could potentially win a couple rounds. I'm not sure if Seattle does that, but I think they're going to be way better than they did before. The team I think is going to fall off, and I hate to say this, I think it's going to be Pittsburgh.
I could see that. Yeah,
again, sure. An old team.
Yeah.
A lot of banged up guys.
Tough division.
They're running it back. Tough division. I get it. There was a lot of movement. But like, they moved out a lot of young guys for old guys. Mm. They're clearly running it back. But this is a team that dealt with massive injury trouble last year. There was a point, last season, they missed every single player from their top six for at least 10 games. I wrote a piece about it last year. Like, every single player in their top six, at least 10 games, a lot of them more. Crosby, Malkin, Jason Zucker, who might not still be healthy yet. You know, like, even Brian Russ missed a bunch of games. Like, it's, I think that they're, and we don't know what Tristan Jarry is going to bring. You know, like, he's a good goalie, but we don't know. We've seen him be really good. We've seen him be really bad. I think that this is, I think any, you can never really bet against a team with Sidney Crosby on it. Yeah. It's not smart to do.
Totally.
But like I said, these are old dudes. It's a very long season. It's going to be tough. All right, we have time for a couple more questions here, so we'll go for it. How many wins will Jonas Johansson get with the Coyotes? I think this is a fun one because I want to read the funniest tweet that I've ever seen, which is, and every time Jonas Johansson's name gets brought up, it reminds me of this tweet. He used to be for the Buffalo Sabres.
Yeah.
Then he was with I believe he went to Colorado. And now, now he's with the Coyotes. They claimed him off waivers again. Speaking of guys who are always on waivers. Yeah. And this is from John Vogel, I think he's the Athletic, who covers the Sabres. He goes, this was in March of 2021. Jonas Johansson's likely going to Colorado, according to Kevin Weeks. I can say without hesitation that the Avs are getting the worst goalie I've ever seen during my 19 years covering the Sabres. He doesn't stop pucks in practice or games. So I'm going to say, what's the over-under for Jonas Johansson wins with the Arizona Coyotes this year?
I mean, he's not even going to be the starter, so...
Like 1.5?
I was going to say 4.5, but that might even...
That's pretty high.
That might be high, yeah, because you got to think of how many games is he going to play and how many games are the Coyotes going to win. So I don't know. I guess I'm an optimist, and I was going to say 5 games. It's 82 games.
I'll say he's going to win 3 games. Like, okay. That'll be my, and I'll be surprised if he tops that. And we'll do one more. Who's the biggest surprise to score 30 goals in the NHL this season?
Okay, so I had two thoughts on this. Okay. One is Yegor Sharangovic from New Jersey.
That's a very good pick.
Yeah, I think he had 24 last year. But I just feel like as the Devils continue to get better up front, that, you know, that'll help him go up. The other one is Boone Jenner in Columbus. And I know he's banged up in the preseason, but it's preseason.
Yeah.
I mean, he's the guy that it makes the most sense for him to play between Gaudreau and Laine. Yeah. And obviously Laine and Gaudreau are going to get most of the offense, but Boone Jenner, I mean, you know, when you're playing with those guys, you're going to get a lot of opportunities. And I think, you know, we've seen him in the 20s for goals. With Gaudreau feeding you passes, how can you not net another 6 or 7?
You're right. I mean, I think this is mainly like a situational thing. He's next to Gaudreau. You know, he's potentially going to be on that top line with Laine and Gaudreau and whatnot. That could be very interesting. I think mine's a bit of an interesting take. I think it's going to be Matt Boldy.
Oh, that's a good one.
I'm a big Matt Boldy guy.
Especially with Fiala.
Oh. Exactly. Yes. Nice. He's on the top power play unit, they said, along with Kalen Addison. Who defenseman? He's not going to score 30 goals, but I think he's going to have a big season. I'm a really big fan of Matt Boldy. I thought he played really well after coming up from the minors last year. He's a very young guy.
Yep.
Minnesota is going to have a very tantalizing offense, you know, especially with Kirill Kaprizov there. And I think with a guy like Kaprizov on that top unit, with sort of the talent he's going to be working with, and with the opportunity now with Fiala gone, I think Matt Boldy is going to do a real good job. I think he's going to get 30 goals.
That's a good one.
All right, rapid fire. Let's do it. So I have a couple here. My first one is, who is your childhood celebrity crush?
Oh, that's a good one. I think the first one I can think of was like Kathy Ireland, because she was on like the cover of like the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue when I was like 13 or something. Mm-hmm. So that would be the first one that I can think of.
Yeah. What was the first movie you saw?
You have to answer too.
Oh, I have to answer too. Oh, my first. Oh, Selena Gomez.
Oh, okay.
Because my sister's 5 years younger than me. Uh-huh. So I was right at the age where I started noticing girls when she was watching a lot of Disney Channel. And when Wizards of Waverly Place came on, my life changed forever. And now I am the man I am today. Okay. So Selena, I know you're single right now.
I think the only thing seen her in is like Spring Breakers.
Oh, that you're doing yourself a disservice. She's in Only Murders in the Building,
which I hear is good. I don't know if I have that stream.
It's a delightful show. Do you have Disney Plus?
Not right now.
All right, well you don't have it.
Yeah.
All right. Next one. What was the first movie you can remember seeing in the theaters?
Wow.
I know you're not a huge movie guy, but
I am a huge movie guy. But now I just watch them all at home. You know what? The first movie, it was probably something Disney, because my mom's a huge Disney fan. So it was probably like Snow White or Bambi or something like that, where they re-released them in the theaters, or like Fox and the Hound or something. Those were probably the first ones.
For me, I mean, I'm trying to think like this. That was a long time ago. I think it was the Charlotte's Web remake. My mom was really big into Charlotte's Web for something. Like, she wanted me to like it. I think I watched that. Shrek was another one. Mm-hmm. That came out in, I think, 2001, 2000, around that time. So I was like 5. And I remember, we were talking about Shrek last episode, I think, too. I remember my dad was more excited to go see the second Shrek than maybe I was, because it's great for adults and kids. All right. So this is all like sort of first questions.
Right? Gotcha.
Like, what was the, I don't want you to admit to a crime here, but what was the first piece of music you didn't pay for? Let's put it that way.
First
that you owned. Maybe through internet.
Like LimeWire.
Yeah. Like what was the first piece of music you pirated, basically, is my question. Is.
You know what? Okay, so LimeWire, that was around the time this is like a really roundabout story, but I went on a trip to Memphis with some friends for the Memphis and May Rib Fest,
okay,
which is like a huge barbecue thing. I was freelancing writing, and we found the local radio station, like Hot 107, played nothing but crunk, like from like 6 in the morning on, and like, you know, being from Canada, we had no idea what this was, but we were like, this is amazing. And they only played like the same 10 songs over and over again. But so anyway, so me and my friend like decided, like back in Toronto, we would do like a DJ night at this Jamaican bar on College Street that was all crunk.
Mm-hmm.
So I was downloading a bunch of like Little John and like Pastor Troy and anything from like the Dirty South. So that was all the stuff that I like pirated, was like, so I could do a crunk DJ night.
Wow. That is.
That was a journey, I know.
I think mine was like, it was one of the Linkin Park Jay-Z mashups. It was like the Collision Course, like I think it was like Numb and Encore. I think because that was, I mean, that was the style of the time, really. That was big. And I guess my last one is, if you could go back and erase one memory that you have from either elementary school, middle school, or high school,
wow,
what would it be? You have to tell the story.
Interesting. This is a great one.
Okay,
so I grew up in Scarborough, which is like, you know, East Toronto. And when I was in like sort of like grade 1, 2, 3, you know, like I ran track, which I guess when you're like 7, it's like whatever.
Yeah.
Whatever that means. But at one track meet at Lamoureux, I lost my shoe at the start. Like as the race started, and there were like Velcro shoes, and it like came off. So I like stopped and like got the shoe, and obviously I came in last.
Yeah.
And that was like scarring. But that would be the one where it's like I would have like double checked to make sure my shoes were done up or had laces.
I think there's one that stands out to me because it still haunts me every once in a while. Mm-hmm. And it's I went to North Toronto for high school, North Toronto Collegiate. Shout out. Had a terrible time there. Shout out. And so the way that when I was grade 9, they just knocked down the old school and built a new school in like the bottom of a condo.
Gotcha.
Like it was like a high school is attached to a condo. It was really weird. It's right at Yonge and Eglinton. And so in that, there was a big window into the gym from from the main stairwell that like goes up like to all the classes on the third or fourth floor. I'm in gym class, you know, it's just guys being dudes, you know, and playing, I think it was dodgeball. And I remember like a girl that I really like walked by the window and was like waving to everyone or whatever. And I tried to like show off. And so I got a ball and I like was going to kick it, but I kicked it straight up and it hit the ceiling and it was those tiles. And so one of the ceiling tiles dislodged and just fell with a giant boom. And there was like dust everywhere. And my teacher yelled at me in front of this girl that I really liked. And I just looked like a giant idiot. And so it haunts me to this day. And if I could go back, I don't even remember who the girl is really, but
that girl was Selena Gomez.
Yeah, man, it's crazy how those things turn out. But I do remember like that. That is a memory that will haunt me for the rest of my life. And I can go back if I could Eternal Sunshine and the Spotless Mind, go back and just snip, take that one out. That would be it because I would sleep a lot easier.
There you go.
Yeah. And on that note, brings it to the end of the Hockey News Podcast presented by McKinney and BetMGM. What a lovely time we were talking about waivers. What a lovely time. And by the time we come back for next week, the season will have started. We'll have real tangible hockey, not preseason, not waivers, not training camp, real tangible hockey to talk about.
Indeed.
I can't wait. Ryan, thank you for joining me. Stay tuned.